Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi. And before we begin tonight's program, of course, we send our love, condolences, and of course, peace to our new ancestor, Dr. Motula Shakur. With that said, family, we're going to open up tonight with just something we'd like to share with you all.
Tula Shakur,
well, because of Tula Shakur and Geronimo Pratt in jail, things that literally have nothing to do with why a man should be supervised. Both of them are innocent, and they're behind bars for the rest of their lives, crimes they haven't committed. And Tula Shakur right now is in solitary confinement. You know what I'm saying? Just because he is organizing other prisoners inside the prison. So that's not politically what is. I mean, to be sent to be by yourself in the hole, you're organizing black prisoners to be united and not to be crimson in blood, just to be united. Why would they put you in solitary confinement? That's political prison. So I like to think my job about you is to bring life to
my heart.
Shakur has unfortunately passed away. Hey, it's Asia Sky here for Hip Hop DX, and check this out. Tupac's stepfather, Motula Shakur, has reportedly passed away after a lengthy battle with a rare and incurable form of blood cancer. Shakur's passing was announced on Twitter by activist Kamal Franklin on Friday, July 7th, who revealed that he died on Thursday night, July 6th, at the age of 72 years old. In the statement, Franklin wrote, "Motula Shakur passed away last night. New African Movement veteran, member of the Black Liberation Army, stepfather of Tupac Shakur. He spent 36 years behind bars as a political prisoner slash prisoner of war. In power, free them all." Veteran hip-hop journalist and author Dream Hampton, who covered Tupac's life and career extensively, also paid tribute to Shakur on Twitter following his death. She wrote, "Rest in power to Dr. Motula Shakur, who, when his comrade was captured by the state, went inside and liberated her. Those of us who knew Motula knew he never lost that audacious spirit."
I'm looking forward to what the future brings. I keep saying, man, this is a beautiful country. The sun is shining. The trees are swaying. Man, it's fantastic. So the nature is a companion to freedom. And I'm down with it. And I thank all of y'all. If I haven't said it before, or if you haven't heard it before, I thank everybody that has done anything to help me get out of prison. And I hold up your banner because I know it's not easy. But it's a glorious struggle, though. It's a glorious struggle. I wouldn't be nobody else but who I am. With sacrifices and all.
Hip Hop DX sends its condolences to Motula Shakur's friends and family.
I have severe periodontal bone disease.
And greetings again, family. We wanted to open that up tonight. Of course, many are feeling the loss, and of course, with that said, also being strength to continue the work to free our political prisoners. More so than ever, I guess, this helps us to recognize that we must continue to fight. Here in Philadelphia, of course, we're talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal, but of course there are, in fact, several others who must now be freed. And keep in mind, you know, the system has a way of doing things in such a way that they demonstrate their message. And so they do release our political prisoners, but unfortunately, they're not able to be with us for a long period of time. So with that said, we need to now up the ante and do even more than what we have been doing to free our political prisoners. We welcome you again to this segment, A New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And tonight, we are going to, of course, dedicate this program to Dr. Matula Shakur and all of our political prisoners. And, of course, we say, free them all. Free them all.
Then the kids become a victim. Business for the majority. Instead of the working majority, I give them my food and then my freezing. New government is excuses. Them to give me peace and you give me war. We promise the justice and then you deal with the war. We promise jobs and you close the factory. But there's always work in the penitentiary. Ah, yeah, yeah. Every few years politicians come. They come from the left, they come from the right. Every few years politicians come. They come from the left, they come from the right. From the Democrats and the media. With them same lies and promises. From the same slogans and them speeches. With them same words and policies. Your politics of hate and to come divide us. Because with your politics of war and to come divide us. Again and again and again with the vote. All over the world and people.
For
the name for government.
For
the call of the president.
And moving right along, family, of course, that is none other than Salim Kuti. And I wanted to share that because, you know, many are really gearing up for the next presidential election. And with that said, we have to ask ourselves, what are the demands for those who are planning to vote? What are our demands? And so in a few weeks, we're going to have here in Philadelphia our Queen Mother Moore weekend, where we will have the opportunity to bring forward our first community-based free plebiscite session. Many are not aware of what a plebiscite is, what it can be, and what our intentions are, and so we're going to now bring that to light. And so I'm going to give you more information about that very, very shortly. But again, the purpose of what you're going to hear tonight lends to moving forward with self-determination, moving forward with intelligence, moving forward to become truly, fully emancipated. So as many have observed Juneteenth in terms of the concept of emancipation, well, we're looking at it from the vantage point of it being truly de facto, truly, and again, full, not just the removal of the obvious physical change, but also, of course, the mental and the spiritual change that is still very, very evident amongst our people. And so again, from July 27th through the 30th, the Queen Mother Moore weekend, and also the National Black Political and Social Justice Forum. Again, what is our agenda? I want to give some quick shout out to the National Black United Front, who is looking at, or is convening rather, their 44th year this weekend. It is really, really a wonderful thing to see and to hear. We had Brother Kofi on our program a couple of weeks ago, and to hear how this organization, though may not be as popular as it had been, but certainly is still striving to uphold the principles that Brother Malcolm X taught and represented. And by the way, so do we. Meaning the Million Woman March Universal Movement started out with self-determination and remained as such, never having a grant, never having corporate sponsoring. I mean, it's been extremely hard to do that, but we've done it. And we did that with the intention of representing in a certain way. And so, needless to say, we're hoping that our people will step up and give us some support, some greater support. Of course, we are thankful for those who have over the past. But now as we really move this movement forward globally, we really definitely hope that we can obtain your support. So I'm going to give you more information about how you can become a support member, as well as, of course, an active member. We have quite a few memberships now readily available for those who are interested. And, you know, we, again, encourage you to, in some kind of way, shape, fashion, or form, get involved. Again, we're going to give you more information about this very, very soon. Tonight, we are going to talk about, in that spirit of self-determination, in that spirit of Dr. Mutula Shakur, we're going to talk about a couple of things. One, did y'all know that there is a supermarket, black-owned, in New York? Yep, we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk to the first president general of the UNIA. He's going to be joining us very, very shortly. And also, he's going to talk to us about the upcoming, or not the upcoming, the established supermarket that the UNIA and associates now have in place, ready, serving our people there in the New York area. So we're going to talk to First Assistant President General Brother Raymond Dugui, and with that, he's going to tell us about what's going on with that. I mean, this is an incredible, a wonderful, rather, achievement, and certainly a demonstration of what we've been talking about in terms of self-determination. We're going to also talk to Brother Kazi. Brother Kazi Touré is also a former political prisoner, of course, a member of the Jericho Movement, and definitely a serious black brother freedom fighter that is definitely on that front line and continuing to do the work to free them all. We're going to talk with him very shortly, and he's going to also give us a report on the Black Radical Conference that he attended in Atlanta, I believe either last week or week before last. He was supposed to be joining us a couple of weeks ago, and we had some issues, but I think he's going to be okay tonight, and he'll be coming on, and he will also talk to us about the great work of Dr. Mutula Shakur. Let me see. Well, something else we wanted to talk to you all about tonight, family, and coming up next week, you know, MWM as a universal movement now has a lot of stuff that's getting ready to take place. You heard me mention earlier about the plebiscite, or shall we say pre-plebiscite. Well, when we do the Queen Mother Moore weekend, we're going to do a special tribute to a few organizations, even I dare say nations, that have been in our midst for several decades. We're going to do a special tribute to them because what we are now learning is that there is really a greater intention of, shall we say, pushing to the side our history. And so we realize that if we do not highlight the great accomplishments of our people, certainly nobody else will. And certainly groups and organizations that represent a certain type of mentality, ideology, and so forth. And so we are intentionally going to present information, historical information, and other kinds of things relevant to real liberation, et cetera. And so during the Queen Mother Moore weekend, we are going to highlight and pay tribute to the Nation of Islam, the Republic of New Africa, of course, the UNIA-ACL, and a few others. And again, because these are groups and organizations that have inspired a lot, certainly the Black Liberation Army. Again, when we talk about Dr. Matula Shakur and others, we would be remiss if we did not mention or say the Black Liberation Army and, of course, the original Black Panther Party. And even going even further back to that with Baba Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture, in terms of the Lawless County Party. And so, you know, we have to make it clear that there have been movements, campaigns, and so forth that really represented a certain spirit that many talk about but won't stand up to really represent. And so for those of us that know that and understand it, we are obligated to do that. So again, highlighting the upcoming Queen Mother More Weekend, National Black Political and Social Justice Forum, we will definitely be saluting some of the groups, organizations, and people who were forerunners, pioneers of things that, unfortunately, we're not seeing a lot today. I got the opportunity to listen to a program earlier, Brother Kalanji had Brother Daruba on, and I'm telling you, it was off the hook. I had to really sit back and go, wow, because sometimes you don't hear, or a lot of times you don't hear certain things, and certainly if you all can tune into that particular broadcast, it was really, really powerful, very, very interesting. But at any rate, we're going to get ready to move right along, family. Let me see if our Brother Raymond is in queue yet. I hope that he is. Brother Raymond, if you are, you need to press 1 now so that I can see you and then bring you in. Okay, I'm not seeing him just yet. Oh, yeah, there he is. All right, family, listen. We are going to get ready now to have a wonderful conversation dialogue. Again, many don't know. A supermarket. You know, we've been talking about that for a long time, how we need to have our own whatever. I mean, we need our own everything. And listen, why are we even having certain kinds of conversations today after 100 years? The Honorable Marcus Garvey showed us clearly not only what we should do, but what we could do. And so today it is such a blessing and an honor to see again the manifestation of the teachings of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And by the way, family, I did not mention this, and we'll go more into this a little later. On the 25th here in Philly, as kind of a prelude for the Queen Mother More Weekend, we're going to pay our tribute and begin the launching of the installment of the Honorable Amy Jox Garvey. Now, of course, we're also doing that with Queen Mother More on the 27th. That is her Earth Day. And, of course, on July 25th, that is the ancestral day of, again, the Honorable Amy Jox Garvey. Both of them are, in fact, two of the Million Woman March Universal Movement's sister saints. We've been telling you about that. So, again, we're literally per commission some artists, some of our own artists. We're not going to do like other folks and get some other people to do our monuments and statues and stuff like that. That's not going to happen. We will soon be putting a call out for our own artists, be it painting, sculpture, or what have you, that will be a part of the installment of our 25 Sister Saints, because ultimately we're going to go on tour with our own Black Women's Museum. And, of course, this will feature our sister saints. And so we will be putting a call out as part of this installment process for paintings and other kind of busts and so forth of our 25 sister saints. We already have one artist that is working on our educational items, our sister who, of course, is Angela Khalifa, who is over at the Nat Turner Library. She's helping us to put together our first educational items for our sister saints. We'll be telling you more about that very, very soon as well. But I do see Brother Raymond in queue, and we are going to get ready to go now and talk about the manifestation today of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And with that, this new wonderful supermarket that is now available to our people in the New York area. Family, this is our first time with us, and so we are definitely honored to have with us the first Assistant President General. Our brother is in queue. Brother Raymond, are you in queue? Is that you that I see here?
Yes, it is me. I've actually been on since 10:44, I believe, and I didn't realize I had to hit one until you mentioned
okay.
it, but I've been in queue. And actually, it was even better. I got to hear what you were saying and how you were saying it. So my dear Empress, my sister, I commend you and I thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, my brother, it is indeed good to hear you again. Of course, I got a chance to hear you when we were up for Brother Malcolm's, the pilgrimage at his gravesite.
Right.
And you gave a wonderful presentation there. And that's why I said, I got to call you up and get you on our program. Because when I heard about the supermarket, I was like, oh, my goodness, you talk about inspiration. But listen, before we go into that, please share with the family a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Okay. It is my pleasure. My name is Raymond Duguay. And I'm at your service. For my whole adult life, all I've ever wanted to do is to serve this beautiful black and noble race. And so as such, it led me into the UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, ACL, African Communities League. This is the organization, parentheses, government that the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey established on July 20th. By the way, today's July 8th. We're talking in 12 days. We'll be celebrating the anniversary of the establishment of the UNIA. That was on a Monday, July 20th, 1914, in Kingston, Jamaica, at 121 Orange Street. That address, that date is etched in my mind all the time. Anyway, I serve as the first Assistant President General, and I thank you for acknowledging that. But titles are important, I guess, but it's the service, you know, doing the service, doing the people's work. Before I get to the supermarket, and that I'm very proud of, let me give your listeners a brief synopsis of Mr. Garvey. You know, he's born August 17, 1887, in St. Anne's Bay of St. Anne's Parish, north coast of Jamaica. 1887. He's very well read. His father has a library, one of the few people that have libraries in Jamaica, one of the few people that can read and write. The reason why I say that is he's born 1887, but in 1883, a census is done in Jamaica of 250,000 Africans, black people in Jamaica. Less than 22,000 could read and write. We're talking 8.8%. To give you an idea, what does that mean? At the end of chattel slavery in 1865 in the U.S., in the United States of America, 10% of Africans, black people, could read and write. So even though Jamaica was no longer a slave state, it was still a colony because they had eliminated slavery since August of 1838. Well, actually 1834, but it went into effect 1838. So they had been out of slavery for close to 40 years. I mean, more than 40 years, and still ability to read and write was less than it was at the end of chattel slavery in the U.S. So the fact that he's born into a family that had the father's well-read, the mother's well-read, the father even had a library, that's a huge advantage. And all his life, he's going to appreciate to read and read and read and continue reading. Anyway, by the age of 14, around 1900, well, actually 13 going on 14, 1901, he leaves school, finances. So he becomes an apprentice to a printer. his nickname is Cap, but anyway, it's a printer that he's going to really master printing. Eventually, young Marcus leaves St. Anne's Bay and gets to Kingston. In Kingston, he immerses himself. He's more conscious. He's more involved. He understands colonialism is evil, that it is a form of genocide. Anyway, so he creates, he joins organizations, he even starts a newspaper. It doesn't succeed. Then he comes up with this great idea. You know, let me leave Jamaica. Let me immigrate some other country, make a ton of money, then come back to Jamaica and build a movement. By 1909, he's already there. He just needs a little bit more guidance. So 1910, he leaves Jamaica and goes to Costa Rica. When he gets there, mm-hmm. he ends up working on a banana plantation. And what does he see? Black people at the bottom. He tries to organize black people and say, no, we can't accept this. And the authorities hound him. He has to escape Costa Rica, and he goes to Panama. What does he see in Panama? And he eventually works on the Panama Canal. What does he see? Mm-hmm. Black people at the bottom. He leaves Panama mm-hmm. and goes to Colombia. Same thing, black people at the bottom. He goes to Venezuela, black people at the bottom. He goes to Ecuador, black people at the bottom. He travels through Peru, black people at the bottom. He even works in the copper mines in Bolivia. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. He's nobody's fool. He's beginning to see, whoa, this is not a pattern. This is reality. Maybe this is a universal condition. Get this. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to Nicaragua and Honduras before going back to Jamaica. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. And he says, whoa, I get it. I was in Jamaica, a colony. Okay, that's a one-off. But everywhere else he goes, he sees the same conditions. Okay, that's 1912. He gets back to Jamaica. A couple months later, he leaves. He's still enthusiastic, still wants to learn more, go out and make money. He goes to Europe. He lands in England. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. He visits Scotland and Wales and even Ireland. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. He leaves the English. He leaves the whole British United Kingdom area, crosses the English Channel, gets into France. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. He goes to Spain, Italy, Germany, Austria. What does he see? Black people at the bottom. He does research at the British Museum. He's going to end up working for Duze Muhammad Ali, who's going to be his second mentor. His first mentor was Dr. J. Robert Love in Jamaica. Anytime you hear or you read Mr. Garvey saying the black skin is not a badge of shame, but rather a glorious symbol of national greatness, he gets that from Dr. J. Robert Love, his first mentor in Kingston, in Jamaica. Whenever you read the motto of the UNIA, one God, one name, one destiny, that he gets from Duze Muhammad Ali. His mind is blowing. He says, I got it. By the way, he's running out of money too. He's always, finances are always going to be an issue. And then he gets it. He says, I got it. You know, there are two things every organization, every entity needs. You need membership and you need financing. But financing is not that important because your membership gives you your financing. Anyway, it's getting late. He's got to get back to Jamaica because he's really out of funds. As he gets on the ship and is traveling back to Jamaica, this is 1914. He leaves England, Southampton, June 17. While he's traveling, 1914, like 10 days later, World War I starts in Europe. But he doesn't know that until he arrives in Jamaica. But anyway, as he's leaving, he asked himself the most profound set of questions. Where is the black man's kingdom? Where is his king? Where is his president, army, navy, and men of big affairs? He says, I do not see them. So therefore, I will help you to build it. And he's going to do something miraculous. He's going to organize the UNIA when he gets back to Jamaica. The UNIA is ultimately going to have, are you ready for this? 12 million members worldwide. On the basis of it, Mr. Garvey tells us we need to be productive. There is an intimate relationship between the means of production and the character of a people, meaning if you're always begging for jobs, well, that's what the world will think of you, a beggar. But if you create jobs, the whole world will respect you. And true independence is founded on production, upon the creation of employment and the creation of labor. You have to create your products for your own consumption. You cannot consume your way into power. You will always be at the bottom. And then he's going to start the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation, the Negro Factories Corporation. And before I get to the supermarket, I just have to tell you this. You know, when Garvey starts the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation, he charges $5 for each share. This is 1919, my dear sister. What were black, what were black people making? Black people were earning between 25 and 40 cents per day. Let's assume 40 cents per day times 5 days a week. That's $2 in 1 week. How did these black people find $5 when they were only making at most $2 a week? And the answer is sacrifice, believing in the greater good for the race. Mr. Garvey sells the black man to himself. He gives us a backbone. And the beautiful thing is, he never took us to Africa. He did even better. He brought Africa to us. He made us realize that we need to embrace one God, one aim, one destiny. We are one people, no distinction, no matter where you're born. Then he gives us a flag, that red, black, and green. That's the UNIA flag. Get this. 1920, we have the first International Convention of the Negro Peoples of the World. It lasted 31 days, August 1 to August 31, 1920. On August 13th, Friday, August 13th, Declaration of the Rights of the Negro Peoples of the World. It had 12 complaints and 54 articles. Article 39 states that the colors of the black race shall be red, black, and green. Article 40 gives us our universal Ethiopian anthem. Article 49 says black history for black people. So he's got, anyway, so Article 53, I know I'm getting ahead of myself. Article 53 establishes the government of the UNIA on August 31, and that's our international holiday. So everything is there. But anyway, all of this, and he's a big advocate of hard work. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever worked harder than Mr. Garvey. You know, he is a notorious advocate of hard work. He is a serious advocate of the singleness of purpose, and that purpose shall be the redemption of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. And finally, he's a big-time advocate of self-discipline, and he likes to tell us, don't complain, man. You know, these people are evil. They've enslaved us. They've manipulated, committed genocide. Don't worry about it. It's not going to change. What can change, what you can control, is what our reaction, what we do. Pull our resources, build it together. And then he's going to give us the Negro World Newspaper, the finest international weekly Africans since being departed from Africa has ever produced. And he's got it all. Then he gives us the African legions, the African motor corps, the African nurses, all of that, the juvenile division. I mean, all, and then, you know, he gives us race pride. You know, he makes you want to be black. I mean, nobody could believe it. I mean, and then in the Negro World Newspaper, the only pictures he's got are natural dark-skinned black women. He didn't believe in any of those other nonsense. All of this. Anyway, now, in Mr. Garvey's time, that's what people were asking. When he asked, where is the black man's king and kingdom? Where is his president, army, navy, and men of big affairs? Well, now, what are we asking? Well, we're asking, where are our financial institutions? Where are our schools? Where are our hospitals? And where are our supermarkets? Those are the four requirements a neighborhood needs to become a community that controls its destiny. We don't control any of those in our communities. So now comes aboard, where are our supermarkets? Bingo, I've got one for you. We call it the FACA ROC. FACA standing for the Federation of African Caribbean American, and the ROC is the Restaurant Owners Corporation. It is a 15,000 square foot warehouse. I'm not talking 300 square feet or 1,000 square feet. I'm talking 15,000 square foot warehouse of all the dry goods, produce, vegetables, waters, drinks you can imagine. Plus, we have an on-site bakery. We bake the goods and we sell it all over Brooklyn and Queens. Sister Empress, next time you're in New York, come and hang with me. I'll take you to eat the best hard-boiled bread on the planet. And you can take that to the bank. How about that?
Woo-hoo-wee. I love it. I love it.
Okay.
Wow.
So how did we do it? Let me say, how did we do it?
Yes.
Let me say this.
Yes.
The president general is the biggest plagiarizer of Mr. Garvey. I'm the second biggest. There's nothing we do that's intelligent or new. All of it is from Mr. Garvey. Get this. Mr. Garvey charged $5 a share in 2019 for his Black Star Line. Oh, let me give you an idea. The very first ship, the SS Yarmouth, that Mr. Garvey ever purchased, he spent $165,000 cash that he raised with black people. And are you ready for this? If you apply a 5% cost of living adjustment, that $165,000 in 1919 would be $17.3 million in 2017. This is the power of interest rates, what inflation does. So get this. So we said, you know, Mr. Garvey charged $5 in 1919. We're going to charge the same $5. But we'll apply a 5% cost of living adjustment. So that $5 that $5 would become now $621. So we rounded it down to $600. We charged $600 per share. Let me tell you the plan. I'm the financial officer behind it. I said, great. We'll get 10,000 black people each buying one share. That's $6 million right there. Well, we didn't get that. What we did get is we got 200 black people, and we were able to raise $1.7 million. Let me tell you, we are ecstatic. We did it ourselves by ourselves. But now that we do all that, you got to go build it. You got to go lease the warehouse. You got to do construction. You've got to repair it. You've got to put plumbing, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and you got to build freezers and refrigerators. Let's do it. So we do that. We came up with the idea in 2015. 2016, we went live. We let the whole world know we had a big celebration on March 26, 2016, at the Schomburg Center, Schomburg Center for Black Culture, for History and Black Culture. Okay. We raised money. We keep raising money. We finally opened May 27, 2017. Okay. We opened. You know, we're struggling financially. In 2020, we finally make money. And you know why we made money? You'll never guess why. Because of COVID. We were the only ones open. Black people said, they're open. Let's go to them. They're open. We were open. So this is amazing. COVID of all reasons. Okay, that's 2020. We first make money. Being the financial officer, I'm not, you know, we issue certificates. We issue shares. You know, 2020, we had money, but it's only the first time. Nobody's going to issue anything. 2021, we make more money. So I reached out to the investors. I said, okay, your ship has finally arrived. So we issue dividends one time per year of 6.4%. Everybody was ecstatic. I said, my God, I never thought we'd make money. I said, no, we'll make money. That was 2021. 2022, last year, we make more money. So the dividends doubled. We gave our 12.8% return on investment. My dear sister, you know what banks are giving now? Nobody's giving even close to 0.75%. We gave out 6.4% in 2021, and now we're giving 12.8%. And the numbers look pretty good for 2023. We issued the dividends December 21 of every year. We chose December 2021 because it is the anniversary of the birth of Thomas Sankara, somebody that we respect, that really believed in putting our people first. What he did, it used to be called Upper Volta. In 1983, they convinced the government to give it up. They took it over and they renamed it Burkina Faso, land of the upright, incorrigible people. And I actually did get a chance to meet him in 1984 when I was in school. He came to Harlem. I was at City College, Dr. Jeffries. So I did meet him, and he was all that. And there was a very famous speech, I think July 29, 1987, where he says, you know, be the market for Africans. We should grow, build, manufacture, process everything in Africa. And then he says, you know, the whole concept of weapons, you know, whenever an African country buys a weapon, that African country is buying the weapon to attack another African country. It's not to fight any European or Asian country. So in effect, why do we need weapons, especially since we don't make them? So no, the whole concept, and he was way ahead of his time. The way he changed the country, gave it a new flag, gave it a new anthem, and then what he did, the most revolutionary thing he could have ever done, empowered African women, the African queen. Overnight, the country became an absolute positive case where they were growing their own food, they were weaving their own food, their own clothes, and the sisters were getting involved. In fact, one of the things he instituted, and this is along what you're preaching in, he called it Market Day. It was once a month where the women stay home and the men had to go to the market and go get the food and bring it back. After a couple months, the men were crying. They said, please, President Sankara, okay, we'll do whatever you want. This is harder than, you know, fighting. And then you could see overnight the country became such a beautiful country. You know, black men, black women, and especially when the brothers started to respect the sisters, like, I didn't know they had it this hard, going to the market, then you got to go home and cook it, and then you got to take care of children. They begged Thomas Sankara, they'll do anything just to get him out of that. But it built a really loving relationship. So because of that, Thomas Sankara was one of my heroes growing up, and so we issued a dividend on December 21. And the other reason why we issue on that date is, you know, it's approaching Kwanzaa. People want to buy Kwanzaa gifts. And for those that celebrate, you know, other holidays, well, they get their dividends and they're right in time to use it for whatever they want. And so it works out well. Let me say this. How did we do it? Well, we had to indoctrinate our people all over the country. You name it, I went. I went to Philadelphia. I went to Washington, D.C. I went to Elizabeth, New Jersey. I went to Yonkers, New York. Of course, I did Brooklyn and the Bronx and the Queens. I even went to Montreal. You know, any group that they heard, they said, what are you guys planning on doing? And so what was the concept behind it? Well, we call it the FACA Rock, Restaurant Owner Corporation. What's this? Empress, you know, the numbers don't lie. We're only talking New York City here. In New York City, any black restaurant that is in business, and they don't even have to be making money, the doors just have to be open. Any black restaurant in New York City that's open for business, they're spending between $8,000 and $20,000 per week on dry goods, fish, meat, produce, vegetables, just on food. We're not talking salaries. We're not talking rentals. Can you imagine that? $8,000 to $20,000 per week. I'm a mathematics guy, so I said, okay, let's use a round number. Let's lower it. So let's use $10,000. You know, between $8,000 and $20,000. Let's use $10,000. Get this. $10,000 a week just on food, and let's say you can identify 100 restaurants. I actually identified 214, but let's just say 100. You realize, Empress, $10,000 per week times 100 restaurants per week is $1 million per week that those 100 restaurants spend just on food. When I did the math, I said, whoa. Number one, where are these 100 black restaurants getting that $1 million? And the answer is us, black people. Because in New York, only black people support and patronize black restaurants. All the other restaurants get everybody else. You know, Chinese restaurants, Thai restaurants, East Indian, everybody will go there. But black restaurants only patronized and supported by you-know-who, black people. So then I made a revelation. I said, hold it. Well, that means black people have money. And we do. We know that. I mean, the money we spend. I mean, you know, somebody should just call us out. Like, really? I mean, can you imagine? No. In 2017, now it's much worse. In 2017, we, the 42 million black people in United States of America. Okay, I'll even give it to you. Call it 45. It's actually 42, but let's just say 45. Now, there's a reason why I'm going to use 45. We, 45 million people, Empress, in the United States of America, in 2017, we spent $1.3 trillion. Now, what does that mean on the global stage? Let me give you an idea. If we were a separate entity, if spending is equivalent to a production, that would be the 12th largest economy on the planet. But that still doesn't mean much to me. I'll tell you what means much to me. In 2017, while we black people in North America were spending $1.3 trillion, the Russian Federation, you know, with Putin, the owners of the second largest number of nuclear armaments, weapons, and warheads, that Russian Federation, with over 145 million people, the Russian Federation has more than three times the number of people we black people have in the United States of America. We spent $1.3 trillion, and the Russian Federation produced $1.286 trillion. We spend more than the Russian Federation makes. I mean, come on. If that's not self-hatred, if that's not inculcating hatred for yourself to always serve the master, I don't know what is. It's not possible we have all this money and that we're spending it and not with us. Well, I could make the argument that the reason why they give us that money is to give it right back to them. Because since we're not creating wealth ourselves, that means we must be getting it somewhere on the job. You know, on the job, so that money, so we can give it right back. That's what this is. But that's another topic for another day. So, number one, as I said, you know, where are those 100 restaurants getting $1 million? The answer is us, black people. We have money. We just don't believe it, or we mismanagement. And the proof is how much money we spend compared to how much the Russian Federation produced in 2017. And the second question I had, Empress, who is really providing these foods? Who is distributing these foods to us? And the answer is not us. Everybody else. Well, I said bingo, or we said bingo. We said to ourselves, what would Mr. Garvey do? Would he start a protest movement? Would he get this protest movement, have press conferences, denounce Jethro, Restaurant Depot, Meatball, all the major suppliers and distributors of restaurant food? Should he do that? you know, and denounce them and try to negotiate, or should he apply self-reliance? Should he do it himself? Reach out to his people, mm-hmm. create a corporation like he did with the Black Star Line CPM Corporation and the Negro Factories Corporation. Should we do that, issue shares, raise the capital, and do it ourselves? Doing that, number one, we're creating wealth for ourselves. We eliminate the middleman, and then we get stronger. I said, what? Mm. Bingo. But now we've got to convince our people to buy into it. And that was the hard work. And then, you know, what saved us? Mm-hmm. Yes, COVID definitely helped us. But before COVID, you know what saved us? Regular poor folk. We created this for the restaurant owners. So they would buy directly from us, eliminating the middleman, and we would create wealth in the community. Black restaurants didn't come. They didn't come. They didn't believe us. You know the philosophy. The Italian man's ice is colder than the black man's ice.
Yes, right.
That's what it was. So they didn't come. But regular poor folk, you know, this is just like a supermarket. I can buy all my food there because everything a restaurant uses, you use. And so get this. So they held us down. A couple restaurants really came through for us slowly. But like anything else, it takes time. Now I can officially inform you we are headed on the right track. We will issue dividends again this year. And like I told the investors at our last investor meeting, you know, we doubled your dividend. I hope you don't expect doubling from that. I mean, to go from 6.4 to 12.8, to double that would be 25.6. I said, nobody's going to give you that. But guess what? What we told the investors, but you control your destiny. How? The more you shop at The Rock, the more profit we make, the more we'll share with you. Now, let me ask you a question, Empress. When you go to, give me a restaurant, Food Bazaar, when you go to Food Town, when you go to Stop and Shop, at the end of the year, do they give you any money back?
No.
No, they don't. No, they don't. They just take your money. Well, to the investors, we issue dividends, and they can control that. So, Empress Ki, I've been dominating the conversation. Now you can ask me questions.
Wow. No, I'm just like, I'm blown away. I mean, this is what, listen, we started Million Woman March 2 decades ago. And again, totally self-determined, totally. First it was my money, okay, then we raised the rest, and over the years, never had a grant, never had corporate sponsoring, and it's so funny, my brother, we created, actually a sister created something called $2 Tuesday. Do you know, I sit back just to watch to see, and it's so funny that, you know, we can't even get a large amount of our people to contribute $2 per week, $2. And folks don't really know that was really, for me, it was a test because I just really wanted to see, you know, who would do that, particularly people who talked all this stuff about, you know, how we need to be self-determined and black and da-da-da-da.
Self-reliant, do for self,
Yes, and some of these people, I look in their faces on a daily, on a weekly, sometimes daily basis, and I just shake my head because they don't even know that. I'm like, I'm writing all this stuff down. I'm keeping good notes, right? Because, if it's not me, you know, and I get it because, you know, some people don't like me, and that's fine, you know. But I look and examine and ask the question, what are you supporting that is self-determined? Because if not me, cool, but help me to know, who are you supporting? And 9 times out of 10, not happening. This is so wonderful. But, you know, we always had a plan anyway on how we're going to raise our own monies, which we're getting ready to convey very, very soon. And, oh, my brother, when you hear that, you're going to, like, It's incredible. I can't release it yet, but again, we paid our dues. We followed what the ancestors told us, and now we get ready to, they don't even know what's getting ready to come. And lastly, and I'm not going to ask any questions. I'm going to go to our family that's they buzzing up my whole thing here. I'm getting ready to come to y'all family. But my brother, here's something that I found to be very important, and I'm so glad you're giving out statistics and information that is so relevant to do the analysis, because check this out. Million Woman March generated $25 million in the city and around Philadelphia over a two-day period. 25 years ago, mind you. Now, I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't get now one dime of that. That all got generated through business. Do you know not one of our people who is in finance, who is an economist, who are professors that teach, finance and all of this, not one of them to this day ever reached out to me and said, "Sister, let's sit down and have a conversation. Because you have proven a capability, and we need to develop it further to see how we can have this to help our people." And note, lastly, I have reached out to them, and I'm going to soon convey this really very clearly. I've reached out to others over the years because that's not my area of expertise. I didn't know that was going to happen. Right? And I was looking for help because I don't know. That's not my area. But I will say this, big shout out to the Wharton School of Business, the MBAs, the black MBAs. They saw this. They saw it years ago. Haven't heard from them since. Okay. They saw it and invited me to the Wharton School of Business, which I spoke, and they gave me an award. One of the top business schools in the U.S., but it was the black MBAs. Right. They saw that was incredible, and they saw the value of it, not just monetarily, but from a strategic mode of operation. Because, again, how could something like that happen when there was no political backing, for the most part? I had no allegiance to no political party, period. There was not already an existing organization. There was no benefactors. There was no, nothing. So obviously there was something else there, and that only that one group was the one that saw it. And so my point is, here we are now getting ready to do the Million Woman World March that took us 10 years to develop. I cannot wait to see who is smart now and realize what's getting ready to happen. Because we done gave people a whole year's warning, and they still sitting back looking stupid. Okay. But
right,
anyway.
Right. And then, Empress, let me continue. Not to continue, but as while we're building the rock. Now, watch this. We travel to Africa twice a year. February, we travel to Ghana and Liberia, and in October, we switch it up. This year, we're going to Ethiopia. Last year, in October, we went to Senegal, the Gambia, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. Anyway, we're traveling back and forth. Okay, what's this? So how to ensure that you always get the foods? Oh, what does this mean about The Rock? We created 19 jobs, 10 employees in The Rock, in New York, in Southeast Queens. But guess what? A lot of our products come from Jamaica. So we created jobs in Jamaica just by having it in existence. But there's more to it. Oh, by the way, how do I know for certain that I can continue doing profitable business? Well, number one, we're distributing food. Last time I checked, everybody has to eat. Everybody has to eat.
That's right.
So
that's
one of the things. That's one of the things we tell our community. Well, I know you have to eat. So if you're not buying it from us, you're buying it not from us. And how is that self-reliant? How is that going to help our community? When you need a job, when you need financial backing, you come to us. So you wouldn't believe how many black entities access to advertise in their entities. And then we always turn around. Well, this is our policy. The first time you ask for an ad, no problem. We'll take out an ad. When you return, the question is, I haven't seen you at The Rock. I mean, come on. It's got to be symbiotic. We've got to work for each other. Okay, but now watch this, Empress. Okay, so how do I know that we're going to be profitable? Number one, everybody has to eat, last time I checked. And we can explain to our community, if you're not buying from us, you're buying from somebody else. But the real reason why we know we're going to remain profitable, we started our own line of products. Our line is called Cockpit Country Foods. We sell ackee, kalalu, and what do you call that, syrup. We have flour and brown sugar coming up, oatmeal coming up. All of this, we get it packaged for us in Jamaica. So we did this for two reasons. Number one, it's a lot easier. But number two, we don't want to take any jobs away from any farmers in Jamaica. No, keep doing it. Instead of doing the label, you're going to label it for us. No problem. So that's another way we know we're going to continue making profit. As I said, the most profitable portion of The Rock is the bakery. But here's the other reason. Well, how else can you ensure that your foods keep coming? Well, have your own farm. Since we're in Liberia all the time and we have a relationship with the government of Liberia, we built a farm in Liberia. We call it Liberty Farm. It's in Grand Bassa County across the Farmington River. But get this. While we were building the farm, this is 2020, from March until December, the President General was in Liberia from March 8th. He didn't return until actually November 16th. But all that time he was in Africa building, his personal wealth, because he has restaurants that he used that personal wealth to build the farm. Okay, we're building the farm. I join him. Get this. While he's building the farm, he had to build roads. While he built roads, he connected three communities that were not connected. And then they started coming by. They realized their children need attention. The children have a lot of needs. So they need schools. So we had to create a school. So we call it the Marcus Garvey Academy. But after you build a school, you got to have curriculum. You need books. Yeah. So now we're in the book writing business. We have two books out already, published and used. The third one is coming out by August 15th, and then three more in line. The first book that we ever produced, it's called The Black Skin, and then it is a mark of shame, but that's crossed out, is a badge of honor. And then the second book is called Tell Me About the UNIA African Alphabet. Like, for example, A is for Africa, and then it explains 12 million miles of holy land, 12 million square miles of holy land. This is the birth of civilization. I know I am African, not because I was born in Africa, but because Africa is born in me. That's A. B is for Benin, the beautiful kingdom that Dahomey is a part of that has all the wood and the bronzes. C is for Congo, the richest place on the planet. It has everything from unlimited water to diamonds to oil to cobalt to zinc to copper to timber, all of that. D is for Dessalines, the race of Avenger, all of this. So while I was there teaching, I went there to teach math. I realized there were things missing. So I said, well, let's talk about an alphabet. And I realized, you know, in schooling for our people, you know, there's ABC and there's 1, 2, 3. If you only concentrate on that, for everybody else that'll work, but not for our people, because we've been enslaved. Genocide has been committed against us. We've been colonized and we've been exploited, and we continue to be exploited and colonized. So ABC and 1, 2, 3 will not work. So what do we need to do? Uplift our sentiment. And that's why we created that book. The Black Skin is a Badge of Honor. So what one thing led us, now we got into schooling. We got into books. We got into curriculum. And let me add, in New York, next Saturday, July 15th, we will start the UNIA Mass Academy. We have access to the CIMOTAP building. That's the Committee to Eliminate Media Offensive to African People.
Yes.
That's
yes.
in South Ozone Park, Dr. McIntosh, Sister Betty. These are my personal friends, two old friends. We meet at CIMOTAP's building. So starting Saturday, July 15th, we commence the UNIA Mass Academy. So by producing self-reliance, by creating this mechanism called the ROC, now we've become the marketplace and we just continue to expand. So let me wrap up by telling you the address of the ROC. It's at 13205 Merrick Boulevard. Again, 13205 Merrick Boulevard, inside of Belknap Street, Jamaica, New York, 11434. The business hours are Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then about our bakery, let's just say you are a strict vegan. You don't want any butter, any margarine, any lard in your bread. You can tailor make it. Call in. They take 24-hour turnaround. They'll have the bread done for you however you want it. So, my dear Empress, when are you coming to New York so you can be treated to the finest dough bread on the planet?
It's going to be very soon. But, my brother, listen, before you go, I want to get in a couple of the callers. I've been waiting for Brother Kazi. He just texted me, but I'm not seeing him in queue, so I'm going to wait until he pushes one so that I can bring him in. But let's go to caller. You are at 2863. 2863, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 2863. Yes. 2863, your mic is open. Okay. Let's go to another one.
Okay.
Let's try 7169. 7169, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day. 7169, your mic is open.
Yes, Empress.
Yes.
Empress, how you doing? I'm just listening, and I'm very pleased to hear of the successes, much continued success to the market and the mindset of the UNIA ACL in New York, and let's continue to support and help our people do the right thing.
Thank you, brother.
and let me add, this is just
the beginning. We built, you know, we want to completely perfect the rock, and then we take the show on the road. Everywhere there are black communities, that's the plan. Ultimately, what do we need to do at the rock? We need to be able to order online. We need to be able to send blast out every week what the sales are with pictures, like all the other supermarkets do. And those are the things we are perfecting. We fully expect to have this all done before we issue dividends, meaning before December, we'll be online. You can order. Oh, how do the restaurants order? Well, any restaurant or anybody that makes a purchase of $600 or more, we deliver. So a lot of the restaurants in there, they make big orders. We prepared for them, and many times we deliver. So meaning we have to get drivers. Meaning we had to get three trucks. You see, all of this, like, with that idea, we just keep expanding. And you wouldn't believe how many of our members and supporters came up with ideas. For example, this brother came up with the idea. He bought this $10,000 commercial-grade filter, and he filters the water to 9.5 alkaline. And he's doing well. Another sister had an idea for shea butter she gets from Ghana. We sell it there. Another sister had an idea of these tropical juices. She filed the requirements with the USDA, I believe, and she sells it there. So what was an idea is now a common marketplace, and we're so proud of that.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Thank you, Baba and Gozi. All right, family. Well, you all heard it. If you're in the New York area, you know you got to go and check it out. I'm definitely going to be going very, very soon. My brother, I will let you know when I'm planning to come. And, again, it will definitely be soon.
Okay. You can count on me. And as I said, we're open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. And then on Sundays, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Oh, the one thing is the bakery is closed on Sundays. Yes.
Oh, okay.
But it's open Monday through Saturday. Yeah. Bakery's closed on Sunday. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's, you know, we're only open till 2. No. We don't. But most of the baking that's done is to send out to other places. I mean, we have our stuff there, like the black cake, the rum cake, or the gizzarda, all the coconut, everything. We got everything. Please have your, you know what? Even better, sister. Let's just say what I'm saying is untrue. Let's just say I'm bluffing you. So call me out, call the bluff, and go visit it. I'd like everyone
no
to go visit it and see for yourself. How about that?
Hey, brother, I'm definitely going to do that. Listen, we got one more quick call, and then we're going to bring in Brother Kazi. Caller, you are at 1600. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Peace and blessings, family. Greetings, Empress. Greetings, King. I'm so excited to hear about what you were saying. But, King, I wanted to make sure you understood how strategic, important, and ancestral what you are doing is right now. And if I could just point your attention to something you might already be aware of. But there's a report that comes out annually. It's called the Annual Threat Assessment, and it's issued by the intelligence community. In this year, for 2023, the report mentions more than three times the word food insecurity. They also use terms like food as weapons, food insecurity, and food shortages. They also reference the fact that Russia has used food as a weapon by blocking or seizing Ukrainian ports. Now, we already know that our time on this shores of the West, food has always been used as a weapon against us, and that water has been used as a weapon against us. So what the vision that the Most High gave you through the ancestors is so very prophetic and on point and inspiring. I want to know if you guys are aware of the implications of your establishing a network for which Black people can find sources of food, what the real impact of that has, and what might be your intentions to go beyond New York? That's my first question. My second question is, it sounds like you are opening opportunities for people who don't engage in food production, but maybe in other areas to feature their products in the warehouse. If you could elaborate as to how someone might introduce their product to you, I would be very happy to hear that. And if you have not already, if you've already said so, I didn't hear it, but if you could explain how people can participate in further investments with the corporation.
Before we go to that answer, if both of you would just stay right there, because I need to bring Brother Kazi in to give his report, and I don't want you to have to rush through giving that answer, because that's really, really important information. So can both of you stay right there for a few?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Stay right there. Okay, family, listen, I need to bring Brother Kazi in because he's had a long day, and I wanted to get this report. We wanted to get it last week, and we couldn't get it then, so we have him with us now, and we want to get the report on the Black Radical Conference that just took place, and, of course, in terms of Brother Kazi being a former political prisoner, we wanted, of course, to hear his thoughts and also words in regards to Dr. Mutulu Shakur. So let's do this and bring in Brother Kazi Ture. Greetings to you, my brother.
Peace to you, sister. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to say a few words about the conference. And I want to commend both you, brother, that was speaking before about the work you're doing and continue to do on behalf of New African Nation or Independent Nation. I know you don't want to be a part of this. So Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Kazi, for staying with us. I didn't see you in queue until just a few minutes ago.
That's okay.
So tell us a little bit about the conference.
Okay, so it was on the weekend of June 23rd and 25th in Atlanta. And it was, the National Black Radical Organizing Conference. And it was a group of people, mostly run by a lot of young people. You know, there was Tunde and Coco and Shauna and Rafi and Kwame. And it was Makita. There was, Amani Allah, all doing the work. It was like the young people doing the work and pulling that thing together, and it was really good to see. It was Kamal Franklin who, his organization put the whole thing together. And it was basically, at a time when from their conference communities, our communities faced a systematic oppression and countless challenges, it was crucial for them to try and get the space for the dialogue for a lot of organizations around the country doing the work to talk about and grapple with a lot of issues that confront us, at the time. And just some of the issues that I saw being put forward were, they grappled with was 501c3s, and how, a lot of people are, competing for certain things and sometimes being gatekeepers and whatnot, holding things back and how to deal with them. And, and another thing is like it was intergenerational. So it was a lot of elderly people, like myself and a few others that have been around for a while, doing the work with a lot of young people. And it was passing on, mistakes and victories. And, Brother Jihad presented, I don't know if a lot of people know, addressed something that kind of touched on a lot of what the conference was about, because we had a conference last year, as you know. We had a tribunal, and the United States was found guilty of crimes against humanity, as they were before, and in five different categories, health care and education, political prisoners, to name of three. But what Jihad was talking about was one of the things that came out of the conference was the development of a People's Senate. And that's where this intersected with what was happening at the conference, because a lot of the groups and people are doing work, 501c3 work, and other kind of organizing, grassroots organizing from a lot of different organizations. And we don't have a vehicle to bring everybody together to make a move on issues, and if we did, we could if we developed the People's Senate and had representatives from each state, and people coming together to agree on issues. What we want to fight for first, what we want to do for a second, how we're going to move forward, how we can bring everything together, because there's a lot of people doing a lot of different work. Now, I don't know, I've seen a couple of things right before the pandemic where we were starting to identify what prisons people were working in. And putting that up and mapping it across the country. And I think, you know, because I do work with Jericho, we work, you know, with prisons, prison industrial complex, and political prisoners, prisoners of war. So people who have been out here fighting the same issues, racism and exploitation, capitalism, you know, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, when the bottom comes up, and those are the people who are on the bottom, the rest of the society will come up. But that kind of leads me into our brother, our good, righteous brother, Matulu, passing, because he, you know, he was a servant of the people, you know. That brother,
yes,
the brother, you know, he worked and helped a lot of people, and saved a lot of people's lives, you know, through acupuncture, and for him to have to stay in prison as long as he did, and yeah, we did a lot of work that, you know, people try to get a lot of political prisoners out and other prisoners out, and it's harder to get political prisoners out because they're the most conscious and whatnot in that's in the system, you know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, people, you know, wrote a lot of petitions and did, you know, a lot of demonstrations and whatnot, but they held the people. I mean, Matulu was only out 6 months before he
yes.
passed. But third stage bone cancer. Marilyn Buck was only out 2 weeks. Russell Maroon Schultz was only out a month, you know, and Chucky Africa, you know, he was, you know, all these people.
And Dalbert.
They held them right up to, you know, they're almost on their deathbed before they let them out. And Matulu was eligible, you know, in 2020. You know, but we have to change up our tactics, you know, or Mumia would be the same way, and Leonard Pelletier and will be the same way. You know, they're holding these brothers and sisters, you know, Joy Powell and Afia Siddiqui, you know, they're holding these people in terrible conditions. And way too long. So we have to, you know, stop. Like the petitions and whatnot is good, sister. You know what I'm saying? But people have to understand, you know, we have to change up our tactics because something doesn't work, man. You know, you can't keep doing the same thing.
So was this
something
that was discussed?
Was this something that was discussed
at conference?
No. No, it wasn't. You know, we didn't even, you know, like I was hoping for, you know, that it would be a little tighter as far as we would leave the conference with some committees put together where people over at least the next 2 or 3 months, you know, would have some work to do, you know. But it was a lot of networking, and I think a couple of different things did come out that I missed. The one with the youth that we're getting together. But overall it was positive. It was positive. There's a lot of community organizers in the National Black Radical Organizing Committee.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people doing that work, at least on the East Coast, you know,
mm-hmm.
and down mm-hmm. south. You know, I think it's a lot tighter,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
the East Coast and down south.
One last question, Brother Kazi.
But,
The issue of the 501s, because that's a big concern of ours, we've observed that because of the influx and the gigantic increase of these 501s, it has really, it appears, and I'm going to say it has appeared, it has really lessen the effect, particularly when we talk about self-determination, which was one of our topics for tonight. But this 501c3 thing has really lessened the focus on us doing for self. Was this something that was mentioned or examined during the conference?
Yeah, there was a whole session on it, and people, understand that, that they're constricted too. You have mm-hmm. to like fulfill what the contract says within it, and as you can't go so far in saying what mm-hmm. the problem is, or you're not going to keep the funding. So, people are grappling with these ideas. With the contradictions,
Right.
People, there was a big discussion about it, but nothing, it wasn't like there was any
solutions. Resolutions.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I would figure that there won't
people
be.
People feel like if you take the money and do good things
right.
with it, but
right.
like
yeah.
it's hard. It's hard for people to tell either where everything is going. Those almost all the organizations that are doing grassroots work and 501c3 work is doing work that the government should have been doing anyways, right? And, that's why they was found guilty for, the educational programs that we put together for our youth and whatnot in the community,
right.
that should be happening
right.
anyways. But we have to do it.
It should be. Who expects for the government? Who expects for our enemy? It doesn't make sense
well,
to me.
Well, no, I know, but no, I'm not talking about as far as the enemy. No, sister,
but,
I'm not talking about. Yeah, right, exactly. Our enemy, United States government, but in truth, right, they're supposed to be doing at the education that we fight for, anyway. If we have our own government, our own separate government, we're going to be doing that work. We're going to be doing our educational work. We're going to be doing our healthcare work. We're going to be doing all that, right? So, that would be the government for all the people. But this is a racist government that's, divided all pretty much. Between red and blue, and really we need a third world party if people want to participate in electoral politics. But it's quicker and easier that I see. It's been about 188 years or something since slavery was supposed to be over, and we're still not respected as human beings. How long are we going to do this
that's,
experiment, this social?
That's what I'm saying.
How long do we participate? Another 157 years, 158 years?
Well, Brother Nissen, hopefully you'll join us because we're going to have this discussion in a couple of weeks at our Queen Mother Moore weekend. We're going to really raise this question around, is this really an effective manner? Meaning, and again, I'm not saying don't get the 501, but I'm saying folks need to be a little smarter in terms of doing that, but also making sure that they're doing something else.
Why are we competing for things when we should be unifying? Should be coming together and unifying. The people are going to have to, all these little ideological differences and whatnot. I know a lot of times people feel like they're big differences, but we're not the enemy,
Well, the reality
we might have.
we have different views. And if you have an entity within our people that is not about self-determination, then they're going to be very happy and satisfied with doing what they do. And that's not focused on us doing for self. So that's their position, and that's who they're going to be, and that's what they're going to do. And we need to be clear enough to know that that is how they're going to function. And I mean, and it's fine, you know, as long as it don't get in the way of others. But unfortunately, it has gotten in the way because some of that stuff is designed to, you know, get in the way of those who are striving for self-governance, self-sufficiency, and so forth. And at some point, we have to recognize that as that's what it really is. And then, you know, just, hey, strategize in terms of moving forward, you know, but to really know that that's really what it is. It is a way to keep the system rolling.
Right.
Because if we're not doing anything that's going to be independent, then what we're really doing is fueling the system.
Right.
See?
Right.
I kind of wish I had known, because I didn't know anything about the conference until I talked with you about it. I didn't hear any, no one sent me nothing, which is, you know, I'm kind of used to it by now. But,
wow. I mean, I don't know. I heard about it kind of. I heard about it from Jaleel, Brother Jaleel, but it wasn't like I'm not online a lot, so I wouldn't hear about a lot of things that's going on because I'm not on a computer that much, you know.
All right, my brother. Well, listen, I thank you for taking the time to share that with us. I think it's important that our people, that, you know, really know, you know, some of the other things that are going on, and also be able to do the critical analysis and examination in this day and time, because we've got, as you said, Brother Kazi, we got to move forward, but we need to be very clear on you know, what's going on, why it's going on. You know, do you know Brother Kalonji? You know Brother Kalonji. You got to check out Brother Kalonji's, one of his latest, in fact, it was yesterday or today one, but he and Brother Daruba did a very, very good conversation, and they broke some stuff down very clearly, and I'd suggest that folks go check it out. Yeah, I suggest they go check it out, because they just brought it right to the front, and we need to be very clear so that we're not.
And we don't need to go.
Yeah.
Right, and we don't need to go backwards either.
That's right.
Let's keep moving.
Absolutely.
Let's keep moving like that. Let's not go backwards. All right, I have to deal with that all over again.
Absolutely.
Right on, sister. Right
all
right, on.
My brother. Again, I thank you much, much. Love you much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you real soon.
Okay, right on. Me too.
All right.
Good. You know, and we gotta free them all. We gotta
absolutely
free our people. You know
what we're doing,
get Mamiya out,
when
man.
When we do the Queen Mother More Weekend, we're doing a teaching and speak out, free Mamiya and free them all.
Okay, right on.
Yep. I'll keep
right
you abreast
of
that.
People Senate. Hey, yeah, and people should check out the People's Senate, you know, at the Spirit of Mandela. Check that out, because, I mean, see where people can plug in, you know,
right,
whatever work they're doing. They don't have to stop doing their work. Just plug in, you know.
Well, I used to get information. I haven't gotten any recently, so I don't know. But, my brother, I thank you much, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay, right on.
All right.
Our power to
have
people.
A blessed peace to you.
You too, sis. You too. Good night.
Thank you. Moving right along, we're going to go back to our dialogue. In fact, I think it's even more perhaps on point based on what Brother Kazi said, you know, this issue of the 501, you know, that's something that we on numerous occasions, and I was really glad to hear Brother Kazi mention that as well, because, you know, again, I don't say don't do it. I'm just saying that shouldn't be the only thing you're doing. And the issue of self-determination is vital in this day and age. And one thing that Brother Kazi just mentioned again is we got to move forward. So with that said, let's move forward. To hear that there is a supermarket, an outlet that allows restaurants. I mean, this is, to me, is brilliant, y'all. See, I don't mind when I hear something that is like really, you know, of a certain type, I don't mind giving it the kind of credit that it deserves. So, you know, I applaud our brothers and sisters for bringing this forward. And with this, we're going to go back to that dialogue. Do we still have you, Sister Sheila, and my brother? Do we still have you
yes,
with us? Oh, wonderful.
I'm still on.
Okay, now, we're good. We got the whole mic now, and I want to thank
okay.
Brother Kazi, and I thank both of you for staying with us, because, again, what Sister Sheila brought forward and raised, it is very, very important. Sister Sheila, could you just recap just a little bit, just to kind of refresh for those that might need it, and then we're going to go back to our brother and get some answers.
Yes, Queen. Thank you, and thank you for that report. So I was absolutely captivated listening to the brother talk about the movement for food and food freedom financially, and the progress and the amazing strides that they have made, even having the ability to issue out dividends consistently as a result of COVID and seeing some things. So I just brought to light what some people may already be aware of, which is that annually there's a report that comes out, and it's called the Annual Threat Assessment. It's issued by the United States Intelligence Agencies. And essentially what they do is it's an unclassified report. It's available right now. I emailed it to you so you can share it with the brother in case he's interested in seeing it. But basically the ODNI thinks that the most serious threats that should be taken into consideration by the United States right now is largely, among other things, food insecurity. Now, I was pointing out how extremely prophetic and ancestral the timing and the success of this movement is that the UNIA is accomplishing, because this is something that is near to my heart. I am always preaching about the awareness of food, and it seems that there are so many topics that intrigue people right now. It's so hard for people to get back to the basics and direct their energies towards real life-saving principles that founded the UNIA. By the way, King, I am a Amy Jakes Garvey enthusiast, but that's another topic for another day. So I love your storytelling. It was absolutely captivating the way you conveyed the story of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. But anyway,
thank you.
You're welcome. This particular report mentions three times the word food insecurity, but it also references food as a weapon. I think our people are so derelict in their responsibilities to their children when they are spending all their time trying to have fun and entertain themselves to the point where we are ignoring the global climate of war at the international level. It's always been a war waged against us with food. We have been ignoring it. We've been making do with it. We've been glossing over it. But the majority of our people have always been in a food war, as evidenced by the obesity rates, by the prevalence of fast food in our communities and all these things. So what's prophetic is the UNIA kicking off the revolution of economic independence with food. I think that should be noted. I sent the report, King. Take a look at it, because what I was downloading as you were talking is that the ancestors have not left us, and that even if you all are not aware of the deeper impact of what you're doing, is you are potentially positioning yourself, and this could actually be one of your marketing points, to ensure African survival through food. So my questions was, and I raised three questions, is were you aware of the greater international and domestic impact of the work that you are just beginning to do around food? The second question was, do you have plans to expand on your network outside of New York? And the third question was, what opportunities for people who produce products are there to introduce their product line for potential consideration in the store? And is there still opportunities to invest for those of us who are just really hearing about it for the first time? And I thank you in advance for your responses.
Okay. Oh, man. Excellent. Before I respond, let me say this to the Empress. At one point, listening to you and the brother, I was no longer interested in continuing our conversation. I wanted to have you continue because, no. It's important. These are warriors who put it, they put their lives for us. You know, they became
right.
Black Panthers. They became BLA. They became NRA,
right.
New African Republic, all of this, a Republic
yeah.
of New Africa, excuse me, RNA,
yeah.
excuse me.
Yeah.
They do
yeah.
that to protect and defend us from these murderers, these police officers. So they should be, revered and respected. And it's, I do communicate with brothers in incarcerated, especially political prisoners. And, I wish, I could snap my fingers and free them, but it doesn't work that way. And it really comes down to a question of power. They have the power to exploit and oppress us, and we don't have the power to prevent it. They can, some of these sentences they put these brothers through, you're talking about the practice of chattel slavery, what we went through. I mean, that's savage, the genocide. But then, they incarcerate these brothers wrongfully, and then they're spending 40 years for something that is not, anyway. I don't want to get distracted, but the brother mentioned we have to do something different. Yeah, we need to get power.
Yes.
And how do you get power? Well, our power, our definition, or our prescription at the UNIA is through an independent, self-reliant economic system based on race first. Basically, your goal is to create a state within a state. Now, the question may be, aren't you afraid the authorities are going to come after you and crush you? Yeah, but so what? They're going to come anyway. And number two, men who are in earnest are unafraid of consequences. That's a direct quote from Mr. Garvey. So you just have to do it. Does it require sacrifice? Yes. Does it require subterfuge? Of course. I mean, there are no free lunches if freedom is not free. What is the mission of the UNIA? It's very simple. It's the redemption of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. Well, before we can get to Africa, let's fix up where we're at. Let's follow Booker T. Washington. Cast down your bucket where you are. Control the schools, the public schools. No, it's nice to have independent African-centered schools. That's great. But, we're not going to do it today. I mean, we should work to do it. But in the meantime, the PTAs, get involved. As long as you get involved, that stops the oppression and the miseducation. That will stunt the prison to the school to prison pipeline. All of this, and then as our political prisoners get released to die, because that's all that they're doing, what are we going to do? Well, that's how we need to create wealth and create and control our industries, our communities, so we can have some sort of employment for them, or even home. In fact, the first home for the aged, that was Harriet Tubman who did that. So this is nothing new to us. But, it involves self-sacrifice, subterfuge, and the desire and the love of self. So this is a multi-pronged approach, and that's the only way to do it. But, our vision is simple. We need to redeem Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. Well, before we can get to Africa, wherever we're at, we need to redeem that, make it work for us. Because all of this can be done, but you need to come together. Well, we believe you need to follow, embrace one God, one name, one destiny, and, of course, race first all the time. But anyway,
okay,
having said that, let me respond to the sister. Hold it.
Yes.
You know, let me tell you about colonialism and neocolonialism. Those colonists, those evildoers, those genociders, you know, first they kidnapped us, put us in captivity, and enslaved us. That's still not enough. Then they brought slavery to Africa, and they never left. Let me give you some statistics, at least Liberia that I know. I've been to Liberia 9 times. It's a place I know. In fact, the next time I go to Africa, the next time I go to Liberia, which is in February, I will be getting my Liberian citizenship. But that's not important. What is important is Liberia is God's promised land. Everything grows. Everything. All you got to do is throw it on the ground and it grows. How do we know that? Firestone. Firestone became big time because of the Firestone plantation in Liberia. They made billions, well, I don't know, billions, but they made a ton of money. Maybe it wasn't billions then. You know, maybe it's equivalent to billions now, but this is how Firestone, Harvey Firestone, became big time in Liberia. Everything grows in Liberia. Okay, so now you say, so what, Brother Dugay? You ready for this? Liberia.
Yes.
Imports 86% of all that they eat. But hold it. Didn't I just tell you everything grows in Liberia? Yes, I did. So how is it it's a paradise? Everything grows, but they're importing 86% of all they eat. And that's one of the better percentages. Everywhere in Africa, it's 85 to 93%. So if you're not feeding yourself, even if the Almighty's on your side, you cannot succeed. They control you. And in fact, this is what happened to Africa in Ukraine with Russia. Ukraine and Russia control 60% of all the wheat. This is amazing. I expected maybe Russia. I never even knew Ukraine was that big. So Russia and Ukraine, 60% of all the wheat. Who's going to be affected? Guess who? The same people that have always been on the bottom. And as Mr. Garvey said, the world has made being black a crime. Well, I hope to make it a virtue. So, and let me say something else about agriculture, okay? You know, there are 3 segments to the economy. There's agriculture and farming, manufacturing and contracting, and services. One leads to the other. What are they telling us? Oh, don't waste your time in agriculture. That's silly. Going to services, what do I mean? You know, you see all over Africa, whole bunch of young men and young women, but let's talk about the young men. They wear these suits that are too tight, you know, high waters, with the glasses that they see that the corporations wear. They're running around. They do all this, but they don't make any food. They don't make any industry. Well, no. Let me rephrase that. No. It's not that they don't or that we don't. We're not allowed to. It's being inculcated in us to wear nice suits and or any suits and play the bluff that I call the bluff. The manufacturing contracting, non-existent. And the agriculture and farming, you can forget it. And so guess what is the only way in the history of this planet that you can eradicate poverty? There's only one way. It's agriculture. Everybody knows that. Well, no. The people that are running the planet know that. And then they encourage us, farming and agriculture, that's savage work. There's no benefit. It's backbreaking. Yeah, but when I work on the farm, let me tell you, one time I was in 2021, I was dying, and we grow cabbage. But I say, what am I, unintelligent? I'm picking cabbage and I'm starving. So I just ate some of the cabbage, you know, and I felt so much better. I didn't even have to wash it. I said, I've got food right here. What do I need? Well, I was starving. Well, I'm a vegan, and so I need to eat continually all the time. And one day I was ready to collapse. I said, well, I got cabbage right here. Anyway, getting back to it, agriculture is the key. Forget all the bluff they're mm-hmm. giving you. It's agriculture. Mm-hmm. And so we know that. But this is amazing. In Liberia, Liberians, Africans, my people, your people, cannot live without rice. All the rice is imported. I mean, what is wrong with that picture? It's like, you know, I feel like sometimes going to the oppressor, the colonizer, you know, the Caucasian, and just say, you know, you're too good for me. I mean, I just don't get it. And so, you know, what we're doing now, of course we know this is going to be a problem because we're going to, and then get this. And here's the other thing about farming and agriculture that they don't tell you. And this is the biggest con ever in the history. Get this. A lot of our countries, they grow these products, but they don't control the price. For example, look at chocolate and cocoa. Cocoa is made in two different places, Ivory Coast and Ghana, Ivory Coast being the top guy. Get this. But cocoa is, that's what they're known for. Well, Ghana is also known for gold and other things. But cocoa is harvested, grown, and raised, and everything done in Ghana and Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire. But they don't control the price of cocoa. That's done in Belgium. Same thing in Antwerp, in Belgium. You know, so how are we going to overcome that? Again, back to self-reliance and Garvey. On our farm, we spent a ton of money building a factory, putting solar panels. Nothing is going to leave that farm unless it's manufactured and processed. That creates jobs. That means you control that commodity. Cassava. We grow cassava. We grow everything. But our two main crops are going to be cassava and pineapple. Cassava is made. You use cassava to make bami. It's a food people from Jamaica cannot live without. The price of bami is outrageously expensive. No matter what price we get it, we sell it at the rock, it disappears. It disappears. So guess what? Now we're going to make bami because we grow cassava. We process it. The factory is up and running. And what about pineapple? We've got the sweetest pineapples in the history of the planet. We're going to slice pineapples. We're going to make diced pineapples, and we will can it. What does that mean? You create a process. You manufacture it. That's what this is. In fact, cassava, we don't grow enough cassava on the farm. So we contract it out to the other farmers, the other people in the area. Grow the cassava for us. And then now we're creating wealth for them. This is a big undertaking. But men who are in earnest are unafraid of consequences. So agriculture is the key. In fact, if you know any young people, you know, some of these kids need to be, you know, disciplined. If when they're ready to study, there are only three things they can study. That's our philosophy. Only three things. Number one, agricultural science. Number two, construction engineering. And number three, medicine. You know, food, water, and shelter is what you need on this planet?
Yeah.
Well, food and water, that's agricultural science. Shelter, that's your home. That's construction engineering. And then your health, medicine. Everything else, you know, we really need to rebuild a nation. We don't have time to study what I call frivolity and nonsense. You know, we need to do it yesterday. So getting back to it, agriculture, we get it. We get it so much. Everybody on the planet except us knows that. And I'm just amazed how 86% of all that is eaten in Liberia is imported. And the place is paradise. Everything grows there. So guess what? It's backbreaking work. Yeah. But, you know, just like these homicidal missionaries who went to enslave us and fool us, they risked their lives too. Well, if you want to do something, you will pay the ultimate price. So I know it. You know when you know it so well. And then our farm is 75 acres. We have another 1,500 acres that are only going to grow rice. But that's not that close by. But that's in Nimba County. Nimba County is pretty far. But the roads are being built, and they're on their way. So all of this, I mean, I could talk forever. This is our real big project. And then we're pushing one God, one name, one destiny, and of course, race first. So that's number one about agriculture. Everybody who's running the planet knows the value of agriculture except us. And it's not except us. They go out of their ways to misdirect us and to inculcate us into nonsense. Like, oh, man, do I really want to break my back and work on the farm? Well, yeah, how else are you going to do it? I don't know any other way. And then here's the other thing, just to show you, you know, if you read history, you know what we did in Kemet, what we did even in the Sudan. Well, Kemet is Egypt and Sudan. We're the first pyramid builders, the first stone builders, the first architects, first engineers, first accountants, first physicians, first surgeons, everything, first people to create dancing, yoga, everything. Everybody on the planet knows this. We wrote the very first collection of spirituality. People call it the Bible. We call it the Book of Coming Forth by Day. This is documented. This is in stone. I've been to Kemet twice. All of that. Can you imagine this? All this we've done. And yet, there is not one black company or black country that produces any equipment. So even when we want to build, we don't even have the equipment. So this will tell you how far behind we are. But guess what? Men who are in earnest are unafraid of consequences. So we just have to do it. You got to start somewhere. Food, agriculture is where we're starting. Now, let's extend. Well, after we grow this food, we need to transport it, ship it. This is where Garvey's philosophy came in. You know, when he created the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation, it was for two reasons. Number one was for travel, because we were still being Jim Crowed. Everybody knew that we were third class citizens, fourth class. But the other reason was for commerce and trade. So now it leads to the next question. If he bought those ships for commerce and trade, well, where is the commerce and trade? Well, then he's got to go build the Negro Factory Corporation. All of this, he really thought this through. See, and this is why we believe, I know it. Marcus Garvey is the greatest among men and God. His concept of nation building is our solution and redemption of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. In the Declaration of the Rights of the Negro Peoples of the World, Article 11, Mr. Garvey states, if Europe is for the Europeans and Asia for the Asiatics, then it must be Africa for the Africans. Those at home and those abroad. I'm sorry, that's Article 13. But anyway, back to your question, sister. I'm sorry, I diverged. Number one, agriculture is the key, is the number one key. We absolutely are cognizant of this. Number two, you ask, do we have plans to expand? Obviously, I told you, by the end of the year, we'll have the Rocket Southeast Queens up and running. I mean, it is up and running, makes money, but in terms of being able to do internet, ordering, shipping, and then having fancy bells and whistles. Every week we blast out emails showing the beautiful product. You know, the whole bluff that all the other supermarkets do. That's our goal. By the time we issue dividends, all that done. But now we're not going to sit on our laurels. We've got to do more. We've got to build. Now, the one thing, the next rock we build will be in Liberia. Why? Well, we're growing the food. Duh, if you already grow the food, create the supermarket. Now, the reason why we succeeded in Southeast Queens were two reasons. Number one, maybe a lot of your listeners don't know this, but the richest Africans live in Southeast Queens, where we live. Believe it or not, on the planet, there's no richer Africans on the planet than Southeast Queens in New York City.
King George's? Wait a minute.
It's not that big. No. Prince George County, they've got a couple of high-earning people. But overall, median income, Southeast Queens. How do we know this? Well, number one, we live there. But number two, get this. In 2006, the New York Times, not that I'm quoting them, but they did the research. In New York City, Southeast Queens blacks had a higher median income than whites. In And this was, it wasn't the front page, but it made the New York Times. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, oh, because the New York Times said it, it's true. No, but I'm, somebody did it, and I'm quoting them. But in terms of education level, affluence, mortgages, assets, net worth, it's not even close. But hold it. But excuse me, brother. You're telling me Southeast Queens has the richest set of Africans on the planet. So it, since you guys got the money, you got all the mortgages, you got the beautiful homes, tree-lined streets, your school systems work. No, they don't. In fact, that's another project that we work on. It's called the SIA, the Students Improvement Association. 2.5 years ago, the president general had a friend, actually the manager of the ROC, her son was told, you know, this school can't offer you anything more. Transfer to another school, a public school in the neighborhood. And so she wanted to know what schools are good in the neighborhood. So the president general asked me, why don't you do research? You're pretty good at it. So I went into the Department of Education website, open to the public, but you have to know how to download data, parse data, and striate it. I did that, and I was amazed what goes on in Southeast Queens. All those beautiful homes, all those tree-lined streets were at the bottom. Nothing has changed. But anyway, I don't want to diverge, but why we built the ROC in Southeast Queens? Number one, Southeast Queens has money. But number two, what built the Restaurant Owners Corp is the restaurant that our president general owns. He owns the Jamaica Breeze restaurant. Our FACA ROC was underwritten by Jamaica Breeze. And get this, she's got three restaurants. Are you ready for this? Every one of those restaurants buys 100% from the ROC, meaning even the paper bags, the garbage bags, the utensils, the containers, the food. This is how you create a vertical. So you build one business and you expand on it. So now you create. See, Jamaica Breeze was entrepreneurship. That was for him and his family. The ROC is for us. That's for us to create wealth. So everything, you know, we're doing all this, but it takes time, and we wish we had more people. But anyway, back to you, sister. I'm so sorry. But agriculture is key. We have full intentions of expanding the ROC. The next ROC will be in Liberia. The third ROC, it's most likely going to be in Chicago. Why do I say Chicago? We have a strong UNIA presence in Chicago. People are gainfully employed. So, you know, I mean, you also need to have gainfully employed people that can spend money. You see, they don't play the whole story of economics. Well, if people are unemployed or underemployed, it doesn't work. And they know that. And, you know, it's a whole psychology. But Philadelphia is, as we build the UNIA, see, you need a base. You need a base that you can count on. Chicago has a strong UNIA base. Philadelphia is getting there. It's on its way, but it's not there yet. But so that's that. And is it a marketplace? Absolutely. You don't know how many people have created industries. Like I mentioned, the juices, the water, the shea butter. But this sister's done a lot of, we call them organic teas, you know, all different types that we sell there. Oh, one more thing. When we first opened, obviously we weren't making money, and we would ask our members to come and support. They would tell us, well, you don't have any organic products. True, but I told them, if you spend more money there, we'll have money, then we can get organic products. Well, now we have a whole line of organic products. So it's really, there's no rocket science to this. The more our people spend with our businesses, the more wealth we create, the more variety we can offer. I mean, we sell organic chicken there, organic ginger, all of that. But we couldn't do that at the beginning. And then what we tell our customers, whatever you need that you don't have, tell us. We'll get it. We want you to come and shop, stay there. So that's where we're at. And then finally, can people still invest? Obviously, yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't have to tell you, this is a private investment vehicle. It's only open to black people. I mean, I'm happy for everyone else, but only for us. And if you need more information, I would ask you that you contact me. Can I give out my email address and my cell number?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. My email address is my name, raymond.duguay@gmail.com. Raymond is spelled, you know, like the regular Raymond. Duguay, my last name, D for Dahomey, U for Uganda, G for Ghana, U for Universal, and E for Ethiopia. D-U-G-U-E, raymond.duguay@gmail.com. And my cell number, get ready for this, is 718-570-7350. Again, 718-570-7350. I would ask all your listeners, please join the UNIA. See, membership is the key. Get this. Marcus Garvey's first business transaction in New York. You know, he arrived in New York March 24th, 1916. In 3 years, by 1919, Garvey's got an economic empire. And he came, only had $2 in his pocket when he got here. He's able to touch us. But anyway, get this. At one point, Harlem had 45,000 members. I mean, I still can't get over that. 45,000 members. And there are membership dues. Garvey's sitting on a ton of money. I said, what am I, foolish? He used membership dues to buy his very first building, 120 West 138th Street, which, by the way, is where Abyssinian Baptist Church is located. So, in effect, that building is ours that they took from Edward Garvey. So, you can build. As you build, you get membership. Membership brings in money. But there's another dimension to membership. The more members you have, the more variety, the larger the pool of candidates. If you only have three members, well, you're not likely going to find a videographer. You're not going to find a mathematician. You're not going to find an architect. But if you have 1,000 members, you better believe you're going to get an internet guy. You're going to get a videographer, you know, just a wider variety. So that's another reason why membership is important. So anyway, Mr. Garvey's first business transaction, he bought that building at 120 West 138th Street. That was through membership dues. He hadn't even started the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation. And then lastly, I got to tell you this. When he starts the Black Star Line Steamship Corporation, he capitalizes it at $500,000. Capitalization means you determine that as you reach that point, the stock is closed. No more entries, and everybody's just there collecting money. His first capitalization was $500,000. Are you ready for this? Garvey exceeds that in 3 months. In 3 months, he's collected $600,000 U.S. currency reserve dollars. What does $600,000 mean in terms of my 5% cost of living adjustment that we use? That's more than $60 million. That's the type of money Garvey could generate. I mean, this is outrageous. Pete, he touched us. Nobody had talked to black people that way. And, you know, all the night, you felt beautiful. The black skin is not a badge of shame. You know, black is beautiful. Miss natural standard of beauty. All of this. Garvey's got it going on. And this is why the U.S. government had to get rid of Garvey. Let me tell you this. During Garvey's time, there were two types of black leaders, the ones who supported Garvey and the ones who hated Garvey. That was it. There was no in-between. The black masses loved Garvey because he was this. He was our savior. Black leaders didn't like Garvey because now they're out of a job. Get this. You talk about the NAACP. They've never had more than 600,000 members. Garvey had 12 million. I mean, they're not equivalent. I mean, Garvey had industries. Oh, yeah, and let me retract back to what I said about Africa and lack of industries. Well, you know, help me out here. Help me out. And I'm going to lay this out to you. all of these, no. So let's go back about the education. When we created the Marcus Garvey Academy, it became clear to me education, for the most part, is babysitting in Africa. Why? Well, there are no industries. If there are no industries, you don't need to train anybody. You know, the purpose of education is for continuity of the species, to provide services and continue your species. Well, to continue your species, everybody must have an occupation. So they must be trained. That's why education comes in, to train those to continue the existence of the species. Well, if there are no industries, what do you need education for? I mean, you're going to educate people and then they'll overthrow you. That became painfully obvious when I was there. And I said, wow, okay, I get it. So as we build the farm, we build the school. Now there's a reason to go to school, to train and continue what we're doing. So there are no industries in Africa. There can't be. In fact, I learned it the hard way. I'm skipping around. The first time I went to Kemet, to Egypt, I was with a tour guide. Well, we did it all on our own, but we had to get on a boat. And everywhere I went, I would tell him, you know, I really want to buy something from Egypt so I can go home and give it back to my friends and families. Everything he showed me said made in China. I said, made in China? I said, it doesn't say made in China. He said, it's made in China. He would tell me all of the tour guide operators, all of the vendors, they go to the local dock. All the merchandise comes in from China, and then it's separated. So, in effect, nothing that they sell in Egypt is made in Egypt. I said, really? And no offense, Egypt is an Arab country. I would call that white. So imagine our countries. So then it became clear to me, wow, this is a much wider systemic condition. So all these countries, all of our countries in Africa and the Caribbean, there are no industries. So anytime you buy something, you know, a T-shirt, a souvenir, it has to be from China. You know, it has to be, the country has to be big enough to have industry. You know, or industries, you know, farming and agriculture leads to manufacturing and contracting. Well, if you don't have farming and agriculture and you've got some nasty devil on top of you pulling your strings, making sure you can never breathe, well, you're not going to have industries. So, sisters, I think I'm going to leave it there. Any last questions, statements, observations?
Well, we have one caller left, and then we're going to close out. Look, I did not want to interrupt any of this. It's been a wonderful dialogue. We're just going to go to one more caller, and let's see. Caller, you are at 1750. Thank you for holding on, and your mic is now open, 1750. 1750. Okay. I'm getting ready. Are you there?
Living on the front line.
All right. Come on, we're running out of time.
No, I just wanted to greet you. You know, I'm loving the show. All is well.
All right.
All right, peace and love. All right. Love you.
Thank you.
Please join the UNIA. That's right. If you enjoyed it, please join the UNIA.
All right. On that I have one quick question on that before we close out. So I've been asking for several years now, can one become a member of the ACLU? Do they have to be a member of UNIA, ACL?
ACL.
I mean, UNIA, can they just be a member of the ACLU?
ACL is UNIA. No. It's called the UNIA ACL. They're not two separate entities. There's only one entity. It's the UNIA.
Okay, so they have to be member of the UNIA.
That's correct.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Okay, my dear sister, I'm sorry?
Oh, I was going to say, I sent you an email, but you didn't address the question about considering other products. How does one get considered for your line of products?
No problem. Well, communicate with me. I mean, you know, it's basically food, but we've extended it because we just want to be a marketplace. Anything. I mean, we even have, there is a vendor who sells T-shirts there. I mean, we're a food place. Yeah, I don't know how well it does, but they asked. I said, sure, go right ahead. No problem. But we are a supermarket with fish, you know, dry goods, fish, meats, produce, vegetables, water, drinks, all of that. But we just want that, creativity, making the mind work. See, power can only come from creative thought. You've got to expand your mind. That's how we're going to get powerful. We're not going to do it by being automatons and following orders from the master. That's never going to work. So please reach out to me. It'll be my pleasure to respond to you.
Yes, I sent you an email. Looking forward to speaking.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. So, Empress, it's been,
yes.
It's been real. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. We got to work on getting maybe a monthly report or a monthly update or something.
By the way, for your information, I'm in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
Now, I was in Pittsburgh
are
for the
you,
weekend.
Are you
and
the Black Unit? Are you there? Yes. I said that earlier.
I was invited to make a presentation on The Rock. The Honorable Charles Barron was the keynote speaker tonight.
Yes.
People, you know, a lot of these people know me. So, you know, but I'm leaving tomorrow, flying back to New York. But, and that's why when you called me early on tonight, Charles Barron was still speaking, and I told him, yeah, no problem, I'll call you tonight. But, yeah, so we're in the hotel, and we're going back to New York, but I was at the 44th Annual Convention of NBUF. I was asked to make a presentation on The Rock.
Yeah, we had him on like 2 weeks ago, the chairperson for NBUF. Yeah.
Brother Kofi Tahaka. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep, give him my regards. I wish I had been invited to speak, but. Hey, I'm used to it by now.
Well, you're on the radio, so.
but anyway.
Okay, then. So thank you, Empress, and thank you, my sister.
I've had this conversation with Brother Kofi and others. We talk about history and the greatness of our people and all of that, but I'm here to say that's all good when it's done and the person is dead. But when it's right here in our faces, we tend to have a very difficult time and making the proper adjustments. But it's okay. That's what Mother's here for.
Okay. If you don't mind, please repeat after me in closing. One God.
One God.
One aim.
One aim.
And one destiny.
One destiny. Ashe.
And of course,
Ashe.
First call the card.
Ashe.
Okay, my dear queen. Thank you for the evening, and I will speak to you soon. Okay,
my brother.
Thank you.
And by the way, just to remind you, we would like to get an endorsement letter for the upcoming, of course, Queen Mother Moore Weekend, and of course, the Million Woman World March. We would love to get the sisters from the UNIA ACL to support us this time.
Okay, well, you're in Philadelphia, and we do have a strong upcoming division, so I will certainly address that, okay?
Okay, but no, this is world. This is the Million Woman World March. So, yes, I'm in Philly. I'll be heading to Boston, Chicago, Detroit, New York, and about three other cities. So let them know we're coming.
Okay, will do. I think you said July 25th, correct?
Well, from the 27th, 25th is Amy Josh Garvey Day. We'll be doing something special for the Honorable Amy Josh Garvey. But for July 27th is Queen Mother Moore, and then that runs straight through to July the 30th. We'll be doing a reparations rally and free all of our political prisoners, teach in, and speak out. That'll be on the 30th.
Wow. So you're keeping busy. Okay, then. We'll
so I'll make sure you get all of that. I'll make sure you get all of that in your email. So please share it, and hopefully you have a representative there.
Of course. So definitely not a problem. Okay, then.
Okay. All right, my brother.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right, family, listen,
bye-bye.
We're going to close this session out. It has been wonderful, very informative, and absolutely powerful. So listen, we're going to close out again. Our love to the family of Dr. Matula Shakur, not just biological family, extended family. We're talking about brothers and sisters in the movement, brothers and sisters he's touched over the years, et cetera, et cetera. We are embracing Dr. Matula's teachings. Of course, here in Philadelphia, we will be doing a full day in October for those who are interested in getting certification in the acupuncture treatment that Dr. Matula Shakur developed. There will be a whole session here, a whole day, and you will be able to get certification because we are building our own health and healing institute from the Million Woman World March. And so again, in October, you'll be able to sign on but be a part of the actual training session from one of Dr. Matula's students. We'll be giving you more information about that in the very near future. The date is already set. We should have Dr. Kokai Patterson on our program, if not next week, the following week, and then you'll be able to start signing up for the certification for the acupuncture oriental medicine certification that Dr. Matula Shakur developed. At any rate, family, we thank you again. It has been a great dialogue, and we certainly look forward to talking black with you again next week. Until then, we say Pomojatu Dashinda. Together we shall win. Peace out.